and welcome to Franklin Templeton Talking Markets. Brief and exclusive insights from Franklin Templeton's investment professionals. I'm your host, Richard Banks. In today's episode, we'll be talking Europe on Talking Markets. We'll be listening in on a conversation between two of our portfolio managers on the ground in the region. David Zahn, Franklin Templeton's head of European fixed income, and Dylan Ball, executive vice president and portfolio manager, Templeton Global Equity Group. We'll hear what they think are the most important investment considerations in Europe at the moment. We'll investigate their prognoses for the Brexit discussions, which have finally got underway, and we'll hear what investment insights they think other people are missing. So stay tuned for that. And remember, if you like what you hear, you can subscribe to Talking Markets through the usual podcast channels. You might also want to subscribe to our Beyond Bulls and Bears email, which brings you the latest insights from our investment professionals as soon as they're published. But now let's listen in to see what Dylan and David have got to say. So right now I'm joined in the studio by two of our portfolio managers with a particular interest in Europe, David Zahn and Dylan Ball. Gentlemen, welcome.
Oh, hello.
It's now more than a year since the UK's Brexit vote, and the situation in Europe and the UK is very different. From an investor's perspective, what are front and centre in your minds? David, do you want to start?
Yeah, I think, obviously it's been a year since we had the referendum that the UK is going to leave Europe. And I think the main thing in people's minds is we've not really made any progress on anything. So it's been a year. We've triggered Article 50 to start negotiations, but really no negotiations of any substance have really happened. We've had the election in the UK, which was supposed to give Theresa May a strong majority to strengthen her negotiating position, and it's actually gone completely the opposite and weakened her position. So I think investors are just want clarity, and they are desperate just to understand exactly what will the relationship be with Europe going forward. I think the main area that people think with the election outcome is it will have a softer Brexit, and there's more openness to having a softer Brexit discussion. However, I do think people have to remember that we only have a limited time frame until we kind of hit that two-year deadline. And if we don't have negotiation, all the countries in the other 27 countries in Europe have to agree that we can extend this negotiation. Otherwise, Britain crashes out with no deal whatsoever. And so I think that's also increased.
Right. Thank you. Dylan?
Yeah, I guess I'm just looking at some of these UK-focused mid-cap stocks and the fact that they've started to underperform the market by some margin now. And I think in the absence of any facts, as David was setting out, I think the market is starting to probably assume downside. And so the issue for investors within the equity space is, you know, what are the medium-term downside risks for the UK? Because even if we're going from a hard Brexit or a soft Brexit, potentially that could see some shorter-term downside. Mm-hmm. And on the flip side, really, what would be the potential upside risks on the flip side of that same coin for the Euroland space?
David, our podcast listeners can't see, but you're nodding away there. What did you want to add to that?
Well, I think that there is just the market in risky assets is starting to price in that things could get worse. So in credit markets, in Europe especially, you're starting to see UK names are trading wider just because people have the uncertainty. Whereas government bonds in the UK actually, I think, are artificially low in yield, but that's because of this unknown and that the central bank will keep very accommodative policy until they can see what the outcome of Brexit is. And so I think in that environment, people are just starting to think about what is my downside. I agree that there is upside if we get a deal and it moves through fairly rapidly.
And how will that manifest itself? Where are you looking for that sort of opportunity?
Well, we've been looking at, you know, we have continued to think gilts will offer value in the UK for that insurance premium. But also we've been looking at UK names in credit issued in Europe or even UK credit. And we feel that for those particular areas, you're getting paid extra for this uncertainty. And we think that, you know, that's attractive in this low yield environment that we're in currently.
So, Dylan, your view is you'd take a slightly different approach, you're looking at slightly different areas.
Yeah, so I mean, the UK domestic plays are underperforming and they're starting to flash up on our valuation screens within the industrial space, but also within the consumer discretionary space. But potentially we think it may well be too early to buy right here, because we certainly do not know what sort of Brexit we're facing. And then looking on the upside, really, I think the European banks can continue to perform in spite of this bond yield headwind that they're facing. And I think the restructuring that's being done within these banks is starting to come through into the book values. And indeed, we're seeing a much more shareholder-friendly regulator within Euroland, and specifically with regards to the location or the relocation of some of these banking operations outside of London.
Excellent. So we're fully aware that over the past year, there's been an awful lot of focus on Europe. There's a lot of discussion about the opportunities and the dangers. What do you think that other people are missing? What's your take that perhaps is being overlooked or underappreciated?
I think that the elections that we've had in Europe have really solidified Europe together. I think that the French election, you have a very pro-European in charge now who wants to make Europe a more a stronger force altogether. And I think that the politicians in Brussels, they're concerned about how do we make EU 27 work better together, but also how do we make sure nobody else leaves? And so I think that's what they're really focused on. And they're concerned about Brexit, of course, but I think they see that more as wrongly, the UK's problem, and that they will just focus on the other 27 and let's keep everybody together. And I think that if we had had a different outcome in France, then that would all be up in the air. But given Macron is very much, let's bring Europe closer together, and I think both the candidates in Germany will, the German elections will also want further integration, I think this actually does very well for Europe to become more integrated and more speaking with one voice against what happens with the UK.
We focused quite a lot so far in the conversation on Brexit. Let's just broaden it out and think about Europe more generally. David, you talked about some of the opportunities that might be presented there from a wider European perspective. Do you want to go into a bit more detail on some of that?
Yeah, I think that really in Europe, we had this rise in populism and people very concerned that this was going to become a major factor in Europe. And I think the French election showed that has been put on the back burner for now. And we saw that in the Dutch election as well. And you can see that in the way Five Star is polling in Italy. It doesn't mean that populism has gone away. It just means I think that this election cycle, the more centralist parties will get a chance to try to run the governments again and see if they can make lives better for the people on the streets. And that's what really people care about. Is my life better now than it was 5 years ago? And if they don't, then I think you'll see populism come back quite aggressively in the next election round. I think that's something that we have to be concerned about. But I think for Europe at the moment, it seems that the political risks are behind us in the short term, and we can be more focused on how is growth going, how is inflation, what is the central bank going to do, and what are valuations of markets? And I think that's really where we're focused at the moment.
Excellent. Dylan, you've talked in the past about a retreat from populism to a degree in Europe. So tell us a bit about how you see that playing out.
I guess 2017 is not panning out to be anything like 2016 from a political perspective. And then with the absence of that political risk, the markets are trying to focus in on the fundamentals and trying to focus in on the earnings quality and earnings growth of some of these European companies, whether it's in financials or in industrials or indeed in healthcare as well. We've started to see the markets look through to the P&Ls of these European companies and look at how the valuations relative to the US don't seem to make sense right now. Europe is trading still at a significant discount to their US counterparts, and that's an opportunity from an equity investor's perspective.
And it's an opportunity from your particular approach to investing as well. You take an active management approach. Tell us a bit about how that benefits or could benefit in this environment.
Yeah, so we try to profit from pessimism in terms of buying when others are selling and selling when others are buying. So as we've passed through not just a financial crisis, but also an oil crisis, and then obviously this political crisis, we found ideas within originally the banks and insurance companies in Europe, and then the oil companies and oil services companies more recently within Europe. And then the political risk that we saw coming through at the end of last year, combined with some inflation, sent some mixed signals in terms of to the market in terms of holding these sorts of volatile stocks, and that started to work for us certainly in Q4 and early stages of Q1 as this spike in inflation came through the headline numbers, and we really sort of paused for breath at the moment, and the market's thinking again as inflation fears have receded. In terms of where the earnings upside is for some of these European companies. So that's no bad thing. I don't think we're going to go up in a straight line. And I think this pause for breath is a chance to reappraise some of our earnings assumptions and some of our earnings normalization forecasts and perhaps have another bite of the cherry within energy and financials. What's held in for us very well, obviously, is healthcare, and that's starting to be seen as a bit of a defensive play, a bit of a quality play, and a growth play as well.
David, Dylan's pointed to a bunch of, I guess, thematic approaches there. Anything there that particularly resonates with you? Anything?
Well, I think from us, we're slightly different in our investing in credit. We actually are tending to stay away from the banks because we think that bank valuations in the credit space are quite fully valued. You don't get paid very much. Whereas we've actually been looking more at the industrial space, which was an area you've also talked about. And I think that there you do get more reward for the risk that you're taking. And so I think that's an area that we're focused on. But also we've been looking more at getting rid of credit and reducing the amount of credit we have and moving back into governments because we feel that some of the governments offer value in Europe, and Italy is a good example. I mean, Italy has some political risk, yes, but you get paid 2% on tenure to have that risk. And so I think that you are getting compensated for that. But I do think that we're also heading into a period of probably increased volatility. So we're running much lower risk levels than we have in the past, waiting for something to happen. But also I think you have to be slightly more tactical at managing things like your duration, your currency risk, because they can move quite aggressively, quite quickly.
So we've been through some periods of volatility. What is your assumption as to what might be bringing fresh periods of volatility, do you think?
Well, I think the big question is, what has been driving markets in Europe over the last 2-3 years? It's all been about central bank policy and politics. And fundamentals have taken a back seat. They're starting to, as Dylan said, starting to reassert, and people are starting to actually go, oh, what is the GDP number, which is good, and what is the inflation number? But we've seen politics has fallen to the background, and now I think the question is whether or not central bank policy will start to change. And I think that is, we've seen some comments coming out of central bankers that maybe they're thinking that they don't need to be quite as accommodative as they were in the past. And if that were to be the case, that would have huge ramifications for the European bond market and bond markets globally. And so I think in that environment, you could see yields rise. And if that was to happen, then credit and things like that would probably underperform. So we're not saying that's going to happen immediately because we think the central bank, the ECB, should remain accommodative. Given the inflation forecast. However, they are starting to talk quite differently. And you've seen this from the Fed in the US, you've seen it from the MPC in the UK, you've seen it from the ECB.
There have been some contradictory signals over the last few weeks, not just from the ECB, but also from the Bank of England. As you're saying, there's talk of withdrawing stimulus, and yet you see the slowdown. We saw the GDP number in the UK, and I wonder if central banks are really starting to run out of time in terms of preparing themselves for the next slowdown. They need to withdraw stimulus before we see a deterioration in the macro backdrop in order to arm up to prepare ourselves for the next slowdown.
Do you have any view on that?
Well, I guess I know a lot of people talk about they need to refill their ability to cut rates at the next slowdown, and I agree that in a normal world, which obviously we're not in, you would want to do that and get the number of bullets ready. But I think that now that we have QE, now that we have accepted that negative rates are a possibility, I'm not sure you necessarily have that same floor. And so I don't think you really want the central bankers to start hiking just so they can get enough rates in there so they can cut again, but that they actually precipitate the very slowdown that they want to be ready for. So I think it's kind of a combination there that they probably wouldn't mind taking a little bit of stimulus away. They'll still be very accommodative. But I don't think there'll be any rush back to get to, you know, much higher levels. But slightly higher, I think they would all think is much more prudent.
It does raise the question as to, you know, whether markets retain their confidence in the central banks.
I think they're very confident in Europe. I mean, I think given where yields are in Europe, we expect that, you know, QE will continue for a while, and they won't, and the ECB will not be raising rates for a long period of time. But markets move before the central bank once they start to signal. And so I think that's what we really have to be focused upon. And I think that we are getting some conflicting information out of them. And since, and I would say, you know, if we thought back like 10 years ago, we wouldn't be that concerned about it because, all right, the central banks are saying this, but we're all focused on the fundamentals. But at the moment, the thing that is driving markets is central bank policy. And so if you get a big, you know, relatively large change in that, that could have a lot of ripple effects through the financial markets. And I think that's what we're focused on, is this a change or is this just a momentary blip where they kind of spoke slightly out of line? And I think at the moment, it's difficult to tell.
So we talked earlier about what other commentators, what other people are missing from the Brexit story. Anything from a wider Europe story that people are missing, that perhaps people are underestimating?
Well, I think what people are overestimating is the returns that can come from the more defensive side of the equity market, within consumer staples, within technology, and potentially within healthcare as well. I mean, when certainly within the staple space, when you're paying over 30 times earnings for earnings that are growing at maybe just 3 or 4%, from a fundamental perspective, you really have to assess what you're buying into with some of these names. Conversely, when you look at financials or indeed some of the oil and gas companies where earnings are going from minus 15% to plus 15%, and you're only paying perhaps a 9 or a 10 times multiple for that, then there's much more value to be had at the more cyclically oriented end of the market. So it's really what they're over-extrapolating rather than missing at the moment.
And what does that mean from an investor's perspective?
Well, I mean, I think the laws of regression to mean are very strong indeed, and ultimately valuations reflect earnings quality, and that regression force is going to work its way into the market and view some of these technology and staple stocks as two sectors that one would want to avoid in this environment.
Well, gentlemen, time is coming up against us. I guess we've got time for one last question. And as we look to the second half of this year, is there one sort of overriding theme that is forefront of your minds as you're looking at your investments, particularly in Europe?
I think for me, it's all about central bankers and what their policy changes are going to be and how well that's communicated and how the market takes that. So I think that if there is a change that... you know, in tapering next year, where we expect QE will continue into next year, quite obviously, but depending how quick the taper is or how it's communicated, then that bond market and therefore other markets will probably react quite aggressively to that. So I think that to me is figuring out how the central bank's reaction function works, and are we at a switching point or is this just a continuation? I think that is what will allow you to drive a large amount of alpha in the second half of this year.
Yeah, I think to that point, there have been many fake heads in the last few years. But I think as a contrarian investor, to avoid the popular is always a successful strategy in the longer term. And so while valuations within staples and technology remain elevated, it is potentially a time to lighten up in these sectors and think about the specter of of inflation, even though the market is nowhere near wanting to price that in right now.
Thank you. Dylan Ball, David Zahn, thanks for joining us today on Talking Markets.
Thank you.
That's it from this European edition of Talking Markets with Franklin Templeton Investments. Remember, you can subscribe to our podcast through the usual podcast channels. And don't forget, you can get email alerts from our Beyond Bulls and Bears platform. So until next time, when we uncover more insights from our on-the-ground investment professionals, goodbye.
This material reflects the analysis and opinions of the speaker as of the stated date and may differ from the opinions of other portfolio managers, investment teams, or platforms at Franklin Templeton Investments. It is intended to be of general interest only and should not be construed as individual investment advice or a recommendation or solicitation to buy, sell, or hold any security or to adopt any investment strategy. It does not constitute legal or tax advice. The views expressed are those of the investment manager, and the comments, opinions, and analysis are rendered as of the date of the podcast and may change without notice. The information provided in this material is not intended as a complete analysis of every material fact regarding any country, region, market, industry, security, or strategy. Statements of fact are from sources considered reliable, but no representation or warranty is made as to their completeness or accuracy. What are the risks? All investments involve risks, including possible loss of principal. Special risks are associated with foreign investing, including currency fluctuations, economic instability, and political developments. Because these frameworks are typically even less developed in frontier markets, as well as various factors, including the increased potential for extreme price volatility, illiquidity, trade barriers, and exchange controls, the risks associated with emerging markets are magnified in frontier markets. Data from third-party sources may have been used in the preparation of this material, and Franklin Templeton Investments, FTI, has not independently verified, validated, or audited such data. FTI accepts no liability whatsoever for any loss arising from use of this information, and reliance upon the comments, opinions, and analysis in the material is at the sole discretion of the user. Products, services, and information may not be available in all jurisdictions and are offered outside the U.S. by other FTI affiliates and/or their distributors, as local laws and regulation permits. Please consult your own professional advisor for further information on availability of products and services in your jurisdiction. Issued in the U.S. by Franklin Templeton Distributors, Inc., the principal distributor of Franklin Templeton Investments U.S. registered products, which are available only in jurisdictions where an offer or solicitation of such products is permitted under applicable laws and regulation. Please visit franklinresources.com to be directed to your local Franklin Templeton website. Copyright 2017 Franklin Templeton Investments, all rights reserved.